He's that kind of inclusive conciliatory figure.
Precisely. I really think so. I don't know. There's some questions here on the thing about Indar Weir being Minister of Agriculture and Food Security. And somebody wants to know about Kirk Humphrey, Minister of Maritime Affairs and the Blue Economy.
Yeah.
They're questioning, what is the Blue Economy?
Is it not fisheries?
It's fisheries.
Yeah.
Is it innovative? Is it a job for the boy? What are your views, gentlemen?
You can't take a young man like Kirk Humphrey and not recognize his immense talent and his potentially serious and significant contribution to the future of this country. This young man who, and I hate to say this all over again, but he has a master's from LSE and a master's from Harvard. Now, I'm not glorifying academic degrees, but you don't walk into those institutions. You have to demonstrate real brain power and apply it. Mm-hmm. When you're in the classroom, it's the same kind of thing that you have to do when you're a minister.
I think Ezra, though, the question was the fit. And I think in the case of Indar Weir, the presumption is that he would have more tourism aligned.
Yeah.
And based on his background, I think in the case of Kirk Humphrey, people were seeing social care because he was more aligned along that trajectory in terms of his background. So the question is it a misfit? No, I don't know. I don't know that either of them are, because, you know, we have to get this out of this idea that, you know, Jerome has to be Minister of Health, and this is Senator Walcott, that he has to be Minister of Health because he's a doctor, and that a lawyer can only be Attorney General, and, you know.
Well, a lawyer can only be Attorney General.
But only a lawyer can be Attorney General, yes, but not the other way around.
Yeah.
A lawyer can be Minister of Tourism. Yeah. But, right, so that's the kind of thing. And Colin Jordan, I think the presumption is that he may have gone into a tourism aligned ministry as well, since he was President of the Tourism Association.
Yeah, but you need that kind of personality at the Ministry of Labour, given the recent quote-unquote history of that ministry.
Yeah, and given the real need for the social partnership to is going to be key going forward. And if we continue looking, Kerry Simmons, Minister of Tourism and International Transport.
Yes,
come
I'm happy with that.
I thought it was a surprising choice for me. I was actually thinking that he may not have been in the cabinet period. But I just wonder whether, not in light of past communications, you know.
Yeah,
I wonder whether that might have been a reality. But I guess in light of the political things that we discussed earlier today, he's at the table. And in my opinion, has been given a fairly substantial ministry. He's going to have to work. He's going to have to work pretty hard in that ministry. I wanted to comment, though, on Lucille Moore, Senator Lucille Moore. Uh-huh. I thought that was interesting because she is a communication specialist. And she's being given the Ministry of Information.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And of course, the Caribbean Broadcasting Corporation. And I think that is going to be a particularly interesting spot, especially for those of us who are in the media, where communication clearly within the Motley administration will be handled in a way that is very, very different from the DLP that didn't even have a press secretary.
Yeah.
You now have a press secretary. No, you have a director of press affairs. And then, which I believe will be another familiar face.
Director of Communications.
Right. And then you have a Minister of Communications who is also a communications person.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this whole social media thing, which we saw yesterday with the broadcast of the announcement via social media and not on television.
And Peter, isn't
it exciting?
Yeah, I heard something in the office, something in the press about cabinet having a press secretary or some such person as well.
Also, is it going to be a press secretary for cabinet and a director of communications for government?
No, I think it's director of communications.
For government.
For government. She wants everything handled in a certain way. I think that was the information that came forward from from Prime Minister Motley. In fact, somebody's here telling me we should not refer to her as no longer as Miss Motley, but as Prime Minister Motley. So, Madam, we
apologies.
Apologies. Yeah. And what about John King, Minister of Creative Economy, Culture, and Sports?
That was obvious, though.
Yeah,
that was obvious. I don't know, Ezra, if you agree, but
I totally.
It's illogical.
Let me tell you why. I know John from his professional work.
Is that
in the
prison?
And so on.
Yeah.
Yes, he's a professor. And we cannot provide Calypsonians as mere Calypsonians.
Mm.
John King was one of the most impressive speakers in this campaign.
Very much so.
And he has a brain, a very sharp brain. He's a professional, and the ministry is one in which he will bring his expertise to bear. I think it's an economic ministry, whether we like it or not.
It is. It is.
So we have John King there. We have tourism. Gary Zimmer is another economic or quasi-economic ministry. And we have the two economists, both of them effectively working in Ms. Motley's ministries. Ms. Motley is going to be a prime minister in the traditional sense of doing her ministerial work and supervising in a very strong way and overlooking her other ministers.
But you know, the economics team, and it has worked out as far as economics is concerned exactly as expected.
Right.
And I think that you have two economists,
right,
one in finance, one in economic affairs. That was
right.
what I expected, and that's exactly how it happened.
And they bring a different discipline of economics to bear as well.
Precisely. Right? Yeah. And then you have the Prime Minister overseeing the work of those two. And then you also have now an economic ambassador in the shape of Clyde Maskell.
Right.
And you have the experience of Billy Miller, who can bring the policy, political perspectives to bear on these issues.
But Ezra, tell us what will exactly she do, though, or what exactly will she do? Because I'm fairly clear on Maskell's role. I am a bit fuzzy in relation to the role of Billy Miller. Let me state at the outset that I am a big fan as well.
Fan of Billy Miller.
I'm anxious to hear from you. What exactly will she do at that level?
I don't know. I will be perfectly candid, but I'll tell you this. This cabinet has, and this country now, this government has to have an international perspective. It has got to get out there and sell its services internationally. If there's one person in Barbados who is known well in international circles, it is Billy Miller.
Okay. So it's a tap into that?
And she has strong political skills. Mm-hmm. You don't be a foreign minister and a deputy prime minister for all those years and receive the accolades of international organizations unless you are strong and able as a politician and as a leader herself. That experience will be critical in a cabinet which is as varied in terms of experience and youth as this one will be. But I don't know what her specific role is going to be. We have to wait the official for that.
A very interesting, at least I think it's very interesting, the appointment is Charles Griffith, Minister of Housing, Lands and Rural Development.
No, Minister in the Ministry.
Minister in the Ministry of Housing, Lands and Rural Development, because we have George Payne, who's the minister there.
Right. And again, you are looking at domestic political realities. George will be able to bring the young man along, and they will pay particular attention to that northern neglected corridor.
Actually, I think he was under the wings of Mr. Payne in this election.
Well, you see, and therefore, George, with his previous ministerial experience, and let me say this, I went to school with George at Cormier. He's one of the sharpest brains around, and he gets things done. He's a no-nonsense fella. Sometimes we think he has a hot temper.
That one that was also surprised me, too, because I didn't really get the impression that he further had appetite for ministerial office.
Well, the party calls and the duty to get these right.
Gentlemen, what about a deputy prime minister? That's the elephant in the room. Let me say
before Ezra said anything, and let me confess my bias here, that I had every expectation that Santia Bradshaw would have been named as deputy, and I thought she would have made an excellent deputy.
Okay.
She served in that role in opposition as leader of opposition business, which was essentially deputy by another name. And I found it interesting that Prime Minister Motley avoided the designation of deputy in terms of naming it.
Or senior minister.
Right. So I thought that it was curious, and I wonder whether that may have been a concession to the concern that you had so many people on board. Why pay somebody at the level of senior minister if you don't have to, or
Let
deputy?
Let me put it this way. I don't know what was in Ms. Motley's mind, but I will tell you this. I'm a classical kind of thinker about these things. It is on substantial record elsewhere that the office of deputy prime minister does not exist within the Westminster system. That has been stated by so many, including by certain kings and so on, but by certain academics, and even Margaret Thatcher herself said so. The point is that you sometimes name somebody as deputy prime minister out of honorific titles. But there are dangers inherent in naming deputy prime ministers.
Mm. As we saw with Brenda Stewart.
Yes, because deputy prime ministers have a kind of
There was this assumption.
Precisely, which is always dangerous for the succession of leadership in the party when somebody unfortunately resigns or dies. So, you have to be very careful because a deputy prime minister does not have to have any leadership skills. That is why particularly he's chosen.
Precisely. And then it creates the impression that that is a logical person that should succeed.
Exactly.
But Ezra, having said that, I'd be interested in hearing your view as well. If you had to choose two people in the Motley cabinet that you think might be likely to succeed her good self, who would be those two people that you would identify?
I wouldn't choose anybody at this stage. They will have to perform. No, seriously.
I'm curious.
No, but I wouldn't. Look. In 2005, I said to Ms. Motley at a photo shoot at government headquarters, she's my choice for leader when Mr. Arthur goes. Mm. Only because I had studied her performance as a minister. Mm. And my view was that she was exhibiting those leadership qualities that I thought she always had. You have to wait and see how these guys perform, these guys and ladies perform, before you can start talking about potential successors. Or deputy prime minister. In fact, I would not, if I were prime minister, appoint a deputy prime minister at all.
Not at this stage. Yeah.
Not at all.
Period.
It's a problematic appointment. Mm-hmm. It creates difficulties. This presumptive right to succession has created problems for the Democratic Labour Party in 1987 and again, I suspect, in 2010. Let me say this, huh? I would have thought that on the basis of political talent, notice what I'm saying, political talent, Chris Sinclair might have been the natural successor to Thompson on the basis of political talent. I'm not sure that at that time enough time had elapsed to give him the hard-nosed experience that he required in the ministries that would push him to the front. But we're talking political talent, the ability to persuade, the ability to throw lashes in your opponent, the ability to, and I'm going to say something that is strange, prevaricate, which is what Oscar Phillips said that politicians have to do. Oscar Phillips of the DLP said this many, many years before he died. Mm-hmm. You have to know how you're speaking if you are a potential political leader. Mm-hmm. You do not commit yourself, for example, to doing things that would create unpopularity unless you're bound to.
Mm-hmm. All right, let me take this one last call before we go. You're on the air. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, you're on the air. Go right ahead with your question.
I don't have a question. I just want to make a statement because I've been listening for a while. Mm-hmm. And I've come to realize that the Barbados Labour Party statement, as my prime minister say, it is for us to be together. So I'm just wondering why everybody is killing the Democratic Labour Party. Why not let us all be sympathetic to them and just not go on and on and on about they've lost already. So why are we going to bury them in the ground now?
Let me say this, Peter, before you comment. I have no interest in burying the Democratic Labour Party in the ground. The only reason I'm contributing to this program is because I think we need to analyze what has happened to provide material for the future so that both political parties can avoid the mistakes made during the last 10 years, and mistakes were made. Yeah. We in the Barbados Labour Party made mistakes when we were in power, but the mistakes made in the last 10 years are such that we could easily, as a party in the Barbados Labour Party, exploit and prove those mistakes to the public. The mistakes were too obvious.
Well,
I'm not interested in killing the DLP at all.
But that's how it comes over.
Well, in that case,
not only Barbadians are listening, the whole world is listening.
Yeah,
and they are still part of this country. There are still people that have to live here in this country, and they have to live with the fact that they were losers.
Ma'am,
they did not run the country the way that it should have been run.
Right.
But we don't have to continue, not only on the radio, but on social media, which is all over the world.
Ma'am, do you not think it's reasonable, though, that we should give the opportunity for analysts to look at the defeat and to essentially chart the way forward for the Democratic Labour Party or assist or make a contribution to that conversation? That was all I was trying.
But the thing about it is, right, how can you make a contribution if you only see the bad parts? There had to be some good that was done over the 10 years.
And I
nothing was done.
And I guess a lot of the good that was done was talked about on the platform. And I guess in future programs, some good will be talked about. But for now, we have to cut it there. This was Brass Tack Sunday. I'd like to thank Peter Wickham and, of course, Mr. Ezra Aline. I've finally gotten you on the air. Peter will be back with us, ladies and gentlemen, on Tuesday. So, Mr. Straker's Tenantry, we look forward to hearing from you, tackling Mr. Wickham. I'd like to thank all of you for participating in this. We certainly... at a very serious juncture in our country, the economic situation is very, very dire. It's more serious than a lot of us thought it was, and it's going to be interesting to see how Prime Minister Motley and her cabinet are going to tackle it. But one of the things that I want to note here is that for the first time in Barbados's history, we have 6 women in the cabinet. We are going to have a Speaker of the House of Assembly who wears dreadlocks. Okay. And what's also going to be very, very interesting is the level of youthfulness. But we have to go. Thank you very much, and please stay with us.